Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thanks for joining me here live on Real Liberty Media. If you're here, that's awesome. If not, you can always catch the podcast on a bunch of platforms. Choose your platform, see if Redneck Dentist is there. If it's not, let me know and I'll try and get it on there. Man, I'm telling you, the weather here just hasn't stopped. It is insane how crazy the weather has been here in Oregon this, for the last week. I'm not kidding. Every single day I woke up and was either like laughing at the freaking blizzard-like snow we were having. Nothing like they were having kind of in the Midwest there. I saw like, I think North Dakota or somebody got 44 inches and Canada got a bunch. So, but I'm telling you, man, even today, which started out this beautiful, sunny, blue sky day.
Like, thank you for listening. You're
kind
to
of
the
unexpected.
Redneck.
Oops. Sorry about that. Kind of unexpected to have a kind of a clear blue sky day starting out this morning, but it was beautiful. I mean, beautiful. And we did a bunch of stuff outside. We got a lot of, you know, kind of things done preparing for Easter tomorrow. Happy Easter weekend, by the way. And then, like this afternoon, it's the clouds like rolled in, some kind of really dark, ominous looking clouds. Like I was thinking maybe we'd have a thunderstorm or something. Nope. Snow starts falling again. It was crazy. So, yeah, it's been a crazy week. And I have a bunch of stories. So I'm going to kind of, I want to check something first. I don't like the looks of this. Oh, yeah, this right here. Hang on. Be patient for crying out loud. Everything's got to work just right. Anyway, hopefully that works. What was I saying? Don't matter. Yeah, we got a bunch of stuff done preparing for the Easter festivities here. Of course, we have the four grandkids. You know, they live here, so they colored a bunch of eggs. We got a bunch of plastic eggs filled with a little coin so we can hide those and they can seek them out and pocket the dough, so to speak. Yeah, but the weather, it was crazy. I know what I was getting to. I have a few stories today. Today's show might seem a little bit, I guess I would say it might sound a little depressing. I'm hoping not. I hope it's more of, hey, be aware of every threat to our food supply so that you can be prepared for whatever is coming at us. I mean, we're already seeing, you know, food shortages in the stores. And it's only going to get worse because I have a pile of stuff to share with you today about threats to our food supply. This year in particular, it's going to be tough. So, you know, let's be prepared and do what we can. I was going to say something funny about bunnies because, you know, Easter bunny stuff. This is the time of year when all those great memes come out, you know, with bunnies getting run over and I don't know, all kinds of Easter things. So what I wanted to say is, you know, bunnies are a great source of protein and very reliably reproduce protein constantly. So keep that in mind. Don't share that with the kiddos who are waiting for the Easter bunny this tonight, tomorrow, whatever, though. Oh, and if you'd like to join the conversation, you can come to reallibertymedia.com. While we're live on the air every Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern. And just say hi in the chat room. I'm kind of keeping an eye on the chat. So if you want to join us and say something to me, I'll get back to you. Or maybe you have a great link to share or some information or you want to debate something I have to say. I don't know if I'm debatable. I mean, that sounds kind of snotty. But what I mean is mostly I'm just trying to share my own experiences with you and kind of point out the things that are going on in the world that threaten, like, our lifestyle, my lifestyle here on the homestead. But anyway, come to the chat room, chat with us. There's people there. They're pretty friendly. Mostly they don't bite. Sometimes they bite a little bit, but it's okay. Oh, I got the Harley back this week, man. I picked it up yesterday. It's funny, it was only in the shop for a week, which is kind of crazy because when we made the appointment, I just needed some routine service done. Yeah, because I'm lazy, didn't want to do it myself. So when we made the initial appointment, it was months ago, and they told us, you know, to bring them in April. They would let us know when we're, you know, getting close. Well, anyway, they called and said, yeah, bring them in. So a week ago, we took them in, and I got it back yesterday. And I was kind of surprised because I figured, you know, they were really slow at stuff. But no, they're just really backed up. So I'm really glad to have the Harley back because, you know, the price of fuel these days, you know, it hurts everybody. And yeah, I don't really have to worry about it. I mean, I could literally keep driving my F-250 Ford pickup, four-wheel drive, diesel, and, you know, it wouldn't bother me that much. But I'm kind of smarter than that. So when the weather's kind of nicer, I'll hop on the Harley. It's a three-mile drive to work out here in the country. Very little opportunity for me to get run over by a beer truck or log truck or whatever kind of truck. And, you know, pretty nice roads, except for the mile I have to ride on gravel to get to the nice road. But all in all, like a six-mile-a-day trip, you know, on a little Harley. It's not a big Harley. It's just my going to work and back bike. So that would be a good way to save money, you know, so that we can put that money into other things like mainly food production, because that's what we are focusing on, laser focused on food production right now. But with that, like this week, we really didn't do anything. We really didn't. Like every day there was snow on the ground, or it was snowing, or it was not freezing rain, but it was rain and it was freezing cold. So not a lot of outside stuff got done this week. You know, I moved some stuff with the tractor. Oh, we got the meat bird chickens going into the chicken tractor now. So they're going outside, well, when it's not miserable. And they're getting close to, I mean, they're probably a little more than halfway done. I bet those birds are probably, yeah, I think they're about 4 pounds right now. And we're looking for six to seven pound finished chickens. So anyway, they're spending some time outside in the grass, you know, and just we moved the chicken tractor around a little bit, keep them moving. Give them a tiny bit of exercise and get them out of the coop. You know, if you've never raised a meat bird before, they're really not interested in going out or walking anywhere or really doing anything. I swear to God, it's almost like they genetically manipulated their brain to just eat, drink, and poop because that's what they do. Like, that's their whole job. And, I mean, they do it well and they put on a lot of meat. And really, it's those chickens are the best tasting chicken, so juicy and delicious. You know, I'm kind of glad in one way that we kind of foresee high inflation and limited food coming at us because it kind of got us going on this whole, you know, chicken production thing again because we hadn't really done it seriously for a few years, and now we're really serious about it. So we're getting to the point where we're going to be, you know, hatching our own chicks, raising our own meat birds, processing our own meat birds, and keeping meat going in our family and some other people too, because we'll have enough to give to some of our friends or sell to some of our friends or whatever, because it's going to be tough, man. And I just hope everybody's ready. I really hope everybody's ready for it. So some of the things, I did want to share this one thing. First of all, let me tell you this. So one of the guys I watch and listen to on BitChute, his name is Tom, but his site or his show is called Switched to Linux. And this guy always has some pretty good tips. If you want to get into Linux operating system, which I don't know why you wouldn't, it is so fantastic to have a system that doesn't fight with you, that just does what you want it to do, continues to work, it boots really fast, it's constantly reliable. I love it. But anyway, if you go over to BitChute and check out Switch to Linux, that guy, so he did a show on a multimedia library or management system called Kodi. And when I watched his show, I was like, man, that would be really helpful because we have a few binders full of movie DVDs or Blu-ray or whatever. And, you know, you got to have a Blu-ray player and all that stuff. And what he did is he digitized or made a digital copy of all of his movies and then put them in this library. And then he used a Raspberry Pi connected to a TV, and not even a smart TV, just a TV with a HDMI input. And he runs his whole movie collection and music and pictures even. He can run them right from that Raspberry Pi to his TV. And I was like, man, that is such an awesome idea. I'm going to do that. So I think just yesterday, I started digitally copying all of our movies and putting them in this media player, and sure enough, it works perfectly, like perfectly. And it's going to be really nice, because what I'm going to do, I'm going to get it, kind of categorize the movies to a point where I'll have like child-friendly movies and attach them to a TV in the grandkids' room, the bigger room. It's kind of like a rec room, but we use it as a bedroom and rec room for them. If any of them want to, like, spend the night, they can spend the night over there. Because we have a different house that, we have two houses on the property, and they sleep in the other house, and one of them sleeps over here, and then there's this big, giant spare room that we utilize for that kind of stuff. Anyway, and then they'll just be able to browse through, you know, the movie library and pick whatever movie they want. And something else that this guy does, Tom from Switch to Linux on BitChute, something else he does is he shops like secondhand stores, and he'll buy movies, movies that he wants, but he'll buy them from a secondhand store, and then he digitizes them, adds them to his library. So he finds a lot of great deals that way and, you know, really keeps his library, you know, full and always has new stuff to watch. The guy is really interesting because he's traveling the United States in a van and he does all of his work remotely. So he just lives in his van traveling the United States, and he does his podcast, and he does some web kind of stuff for people, IT support, security and stuff like that. So he's a really interesting guy. So you might want to check him out. And I've tried this stuff myself. It's working great. Except for the Raspberry Pi part. But I have my old Raspberry Pi sitting right here, ready to go. I'll plug it in and start working on it after I get all of the movies kind of copied over, which I'm probably not even halfway done. It takes about between like 7 and 15 minutes to digitize a movie, which that's not too bad, I don't think. And the end product has been between 4 and 6 gigabytes. So, you know, if you have 1,000 movies, you're going to want a lot of space. We have a few hundred movies, so it'll be kind of interesting to see when I'm done how much space that takes up and how easy it is to copy to another drive, put it on a, you know, a network feeder system so that every TV in the house could access it. But that's the plan anyway, and that has been really fun. I did see this ad in the, let me see, I just ran into this. This is an ad from the Poshington Post. It says, help wanted in the state of Florida. Sex ed teachers needed. Provide sexual education to young people aged 6 to 15 in private settings. You may be asked to demonstrate certain sexual activities. Students are sworn to secrecy from their parents. Apply via the dark web. Okay. It says this job is no longer available, but you can still apply at Disney. Okay. Yeah. I can see that happening. Well, hopefully not. You know, we're doing what we can to stop that kind of stuff from going on, but you never know. That probably will show up somewhere along the way. Okay. All right. I wanted to address this Twitter thing with Elon Musk. This has been so entertaining this week to kind of watch this little bit of a chess game going on, because Twitter is in a very difficult position if you don't know all of this already. So Elon Musk offered to buy Twitter at $54.20 per share, which everybody's kind of laughing about the 420 part of that number. He definitely was making a statement with that. I think he does often. It's just kind of humorous anyway. But so Twitter, you know, first of all, Elon Musk bought in like 9.2% of Twitter, 2 weeks ago. And then he offered to buy the entire thing for $54.20 a share. And of course, it drove the progressives, the mainstream media, and the liberals absolutely crazy that somebody would be taking away their power structure, you know, to make it an actual free speech platform. And here's the problem that Twitter's going to be facing. One is, I guess you don't ever have to accept an offer from anybody, but you kind of have a fiduciary duty to do the right thing for the shareholders. Shareholders invest in companies for, well, probably more than one reason, but the probably biggest reason is because they want to make money. They want to increase their value. Now, I guess some people would argue that the value in Twitter really isn't monetary, and there's going to be some discussion about that along the way, I'm sure. But mostly people, when they're investing money for their future, they want that money to increase. Twitter has a fiduciary duty to make sure that they do the right thing for their shareholders. So if they turn down this offer, there's going to be some people that are going to be kind of pissed, like, hey, you know, you didn't do the best thing right here, and you weren't watching out for my interest, and they can turn around and sue Twitter for, you know, whatever damages that were caused because they lost money on the deal, especially if Twitter turns down this offer, and then Elon Musk sells his shares, and the... Yeah, I saw that they opted for the poison pill. I'll get into that too. But if Elon Musk sells his shares and the price tanks, which it might, I mean, it could be that it would tank. I would think a lot of people would be trying to get out of it. Then the people who are invested in it are actually going to lose money, and I think they would be pissed. Now, not all of them, because some of them really want the power that's connected to Twitter. They want that censorship that comes along with, you know, Twitter, like the, you know, social media Twitter that censors, you know, opposing views and actually even doesn't allow the truth to be spoken if the truth is kind of damaging to their agenda. Now, those people won't be so pissed that they've lost a little money because they have plenty of money to lose. Yeah, the poison pill that was mentioned in the chat room is that Twitter will just reduce the price of new shares so that people will buy up a larger percentage of the company or a larger fraction of the company and prevent, like, somebody, I guess, like Elon, from coming in and buying it up. Now, why he wouldn't buy it up at $20 a share, I have no idea. Like, okay. I guess what it is they would only allow shareholders to buy up for that. I don't know. I don't know how all that works, but I know that they have a plan to prevent Elon from buying Twitter and doing and making it a free speech platform. Here's the problem with that. The poison pill would, well, one, it would drop the price of the stock. Well, Elon Musk, who owns 9.2% of Twitter, would probably be pissed about that, and he would probably then sue Twitter because they caused his stock to devalue, and they did it purposefully. I mean, we're already talking about it. Like, so it's not like, oh, well, we just decided to drop the price of the stock. No, they planned to make the value of the stock less. Elon's got a pretty big, you know, pretty big piece of that company, you know, nearly 10%. Oh, yeah, he would sue him for the damages, I'm sure. And the funny thing is, Elon has said himself, it's not a financial thing for him. He literally believes that free speech is good for all countries in the world. He said that himself. So it's not a money thing, but I could see that he's going to benefit from this transaction either way. If he just imagine if this deal goes through and he buys Twitter, it's going to increase in value because everybody who has left Twitter is going to come back to Twitter. Not everybody. A lot of people are going to come back to Twitter. And of course, why wouldn't you? It's a huge platform. You know, in the beginning, people were thinking it was a pretty successful platform. You know, I don't use it to promote my show because I don't believe in it. Now, if the atmosphere of Twitter changed, I would probably go back to Twitter and promote my show on Twitter. But I'd have to be convinced that it's changed, you know, that it truly would be a free speech alternative, a free speech social media platform. And yeah, here's the thing about free speech platforms. Sometimes you don't like what people have to say. You have a lot of options. You don't have to listen to them. You can ignore them. You can block their tweets so you don't ever have to see any again. I know this one thing. For example, I know that I have blocked somebody in the Real Liberty Media chat. I don't know who it was. I just remember one day, I don't have a lot of time for BS in different parts of my life, and that's one of them. I love most of the people in Real Liberty Media, I mean, in the chat room, and I've told most of them they're welcome to come to my place like anytime they want if they need to get away from whatever and, you know, hang out or, you know, want to try and survive, you're welcome to come here. But I know there's one person, and I don't even know who it is. I put them on the ignore list because they were being really ugly one day to somebody else, not even me. And I was just like, I'm not gonna. Number one, I would probably start responding to that person if I continued to watch and listen to what they were typing, and it was ugly and mean. And so I put them on ignore. I don't even know who it is, but I know that they still are in the chat because I see other people talking sometimes, and I'm like, I wonder who in the hell they're talking to. Well, they're talking to the person I ignored, I'm sure. But big deal. That person doesn't know that I ignored them. And they're not bothering me now because I don't see any of the stuff they say. So it's all good. And that's what you can do with Twitter. But yeah, I could imagine Twitter would blow up pretty big if Elon Musk bought it. Anybody bought it who actually made it a free speech platform and took away all the censorship. The other thing I was going to say, yeah, there's some ugly stuff that'll be said on a free speech platform. But that's the point of free speech. You don't have to agree with everybody. But free speech kind of necessarily means there's going to be stuff out there that you don't like. Well, grow up, for God's sake. You know, either, you know, respond to it, don't respond to it, ignore it, don't ignore it. That's free speech. And I think it's healthy. I love free speech. Absolutely love it. I mean, where do you get material if you can't listen to people make complete morons of themselves daily talking about fictitious crap? So it's a good place to go, you know, to get some material for your shows or just for entertainment purposes, period. Let's see. Yeah, what this does show all of us is how important control censorship via social media is. It is so important that right now a company, Twitter, is thinking about actually tanking the value of the stock itself so that more shareholders or existing shareholders can buy more stock very cheap. Now they're going to make that seem like a good thing for the shareholders. Oh, how they're going to make that seem like a good thing for the shareholders is beyond me. Their only argument is going to be to preserve their control at any cost. There are going to be shareholders like that and a bunch that are not going to like that at all. They're going to be able to sue and win. Twitter is in a bad spot. That is for sure. So I got to put my glasses on. Very rare that I have to do that anymore, but I do. Oh, yes, they all suck. God, that's no kidding. I do the. Oh, I said I'm kind of finishing up this note. I actually wrote it, so I should actually follow it myself. It says, "Will I use Twitter if it does become truly free speech?" Sure. The way Twitter is now, there's no sense for me to use it. I would constantly be censored. What good would it do me? On the other hand, if we can have lively debates or discussions and promote our podcast, sure, it would be beneficial. And then I say, I do this podcast for fun and to provide some helpful tips about living the way we live. Reaching more people would be great, but it isn't necessary for me to consider what I do to be successful. My own joy and the feedback I get from listeners is success enough for me. All right, so we're going to get into some other meaty stuff here because, like I said, there's a lot of threats to food supply. And one of the things I'm just passionate about doing, I guess, is making sure that everybody who listens to my podcast, everybody who knows me, where's the beef? No kidding. Is aware of the things that are coming down the line because some of the things that happen today are not going to affect you immediately, but they are going to affect the coming, well, harvest season for sure. Already we're having issues with planting season and fruit trees, and I'm going to get into all of that here shortly. I wanted to talk about something because it is kind of close to home, but there were two outbreaks of avian flu in Idaho. Now, Idaho is, I mean, relatively, it's a long ways away, but as far as states go, it's on our border, Oregon's border, so it's not that far away. And no, I'm not worried about the avian flu that was found in Idaho infecting my little flock of chickens. But the point is, you know, out of the blue, these two, and one was a producer of chickens for, you know, consumption, and one was a family farm. They were 200 miles apart. They had nothing to do with each other, but still both of those chicken flocks got infected with avian flu. And so they had to wipe out the whole bunch. I think that's how they deal with it pretty much. So my point is, you know, you could be going along raising your meat birds, raising, keep taking care of your little flock of chickens, and all of a sudden, boom, you find one dead one day, and you're like, oh, yeah, I mean, that happens, you know, it's like, oh, chicken died, no big deal, throw it on the burn pile, burn it, you know, done. And then the next day, you know, another one dies, or two or three die, and then pretty soon, it's like, oh, you're done, you have no chickens. Because they all got avian flu, and either you turned it in to the authorities and had them come out and call your herd or flock, or you do it yourself. Either way, you know, there goes your reliable meat production. Not so reliable after avian flu comes in and makes them all sick and wipes them out. But, yeah. It happens. And I actually, when I was, after I read that story about those two flocks, I noticed there was a bunch of other recommended stories that came up of avian flu wiping out giant flocks of chickens in the United States and elsewhere. And remember last week I talked about a fox in Japan that had avian flu that they say probably got it from eating an infected bird. But it's another one of those interspecies transmissions of a virus that, you know, probably shouldn't go that way. So I don't know. That one's still waiting to see what really happened there. I have to wet the whistle here. Hang on. Okay. So, let's see. The affected flocks appear to be unrelated. Yeah, Gooding County is in south central Idaho and Caribou County is in the southeast of Idaho. They're roughly 200 miles apart. The virus is found in several birds in the two small flocks. One is defined as a poultry operation, meaning it sells or gives away poultry, eggs, and meat. The other is defined as a non-poultry domestic operation, which does not distribute products. So anyway, you know, things are happening there. Those two flocks wouldn't affect most of us, probably none of us for that matter. But the giant flocks, the big, you know, poultry producer flocks that they're having to kill so many birds from because they're infected with avian flu, that's going to affect everybody who eats chicken. Not only chicken, but chicken wings, you know, chicken legs, broilers, chicken nuggets, although there's a lot of other meat in chicken nuggets. If you haven't followed me for over a year, you might not know. But yeah, there's all kinds of meat in chicken nuggets, depending on where you get them. And I'm not just talking about McNuggets, although I won't even say anything. I heard that their meat was getting better, but actually I think it doesn't mean the nuggets. I think that was their beef patties are actually, I don't know, if you order a certain burger, it actually has a higher percentage of meat, or maybe it's 100% beef, something like that. I'll have to look into that if anybody's interested. One of the things that I noticed this week, and then I read a story about that is going to affect, you know, some of our fruit resources. You know, some states are just like particularly suited for producing certain kinds of food. And Washington State happens to be a state that produces a lot of fruit, mainly apples, but I think cherries and some other fruits from eastern Washington. Well, guess what? This week, and really, we haven't had a big break in the weather since winter time. Yeah, I think we had a week. But mostly, like, we've had this on and off, freezing cold, windy weather with snow and cold. And what has happened is, those, like, giant orchards of fruit trees are not getting pollinated because why? because the bees aren't flying, for one. Not that bees are the only ones that, you know, pollinate fruit trees, but they're pretty important, they're pretty efficient at it. But you know what I noticed this week? So, you know, we added the bees a few weeks ago to the north pasture. We have four boxes with four queens and four swarms. And I noticed when the weather was kind of milder, they were out flying like crazy. I could see them even with my naked eye from that's probably 200 yards. You could see bees flying around like crazy up there. Since this cold, you know, snowy, rainy, hail weather has been hanging over us, those bees haven't been flying. I'm sure they're trying to keep those queens toasty warm and alive. So the bees just aren't getting out the way I'm sure that they should, or everybody expects them to be out already. I mean, what are we at? We're in the middle of April, for crying out loud. In Oregon, it's so rare to have like snow, period, but yet we've had snow for days on end. And it's keeping those bees locked down. They're not coming out and they're not pollinating. I mean, we have tons of cherry trees. We don't have tons. We have quite a few cherry trees here. And they're in full blossom, of course. And when we first put the bees up there, they were blossoming. So I know a ton of them got pollinated. But now it's like, you know, those blooms are going to come and go. And if they don't get pollinated, it's not going to produce fruit. And that's what's happening in eastern Washington is the bees aren't flying. There's not, I guess, well, let's say you could have wind, but if the pollen is too wet to actually be lifted by the wind and carried on the wind to pollinate other blossoms, it's not going to do it. Hummingbirds do a good job at that, too. That's something last week I talked about, beneficial critters in your garden. And that's one I kind of forgot, but I was thinking about it this week because, we had a couple new cats move in with the kids and grandkids. And those cats are like trying to be hunters. So they're out there all the time kind of harassing the wildlife, which is fine. That's what cats do. We hate it when they take birds, but it happens. They do. But I noticed like the hummingbirds are so smart. Because they'll, number one, they're really fast, and they see the cat just sitting, you know, underneath a hummingbird feeder, and they'll just position themselves so the cat can't, well, number one, see them, and number two, can't actually get to them. So, and they'll just like feed and kind of look at the cat, feed and look at the cat. But what I noticed this week was those hummingbirds are going through the landscaping area here where we have a lot of blooming flowers, and they're feeding on those flowers, which is good. That means all of those things are getting pollinated correctly, and I'm hoping that those hummingbirds are also going out to those fruit trees and helping with that pollination process too. But my point was, sorry, got a cough. Allergies, even with the kind of reduced pollen count. So my point was that Western Washington, which is a major fruit producer in this country, and especially for the Pacific Northwest, where you can get them, you know, fresh and, you know, relatively inexpensive. They might be more scarce this year. Might be more expensive this year because there'll be fewer of them and the demand will be the same or higher. People want to have some, you know, fresh apples. I mean, they produce all kinds of apples up there. And I know they produce Bing and Rainier somebody calls them Queen Anne cherries. But yeah, they produce a lot of fruit up there, and it's they're having a rough time right now. Oh my gosh! And then we get into the fuel prices. You know that the fuel prices are continuing to rise, especially at a time when farmers are trying to get, you know, they're trying to plant. I mean, it's time to put stuff in the ground so it, you know, is ready for harvest during harvest season, and they're not, you know, they're going to pay a higher cost for fuel. And I said this before, but it's like it continues. Not only does it continue because the current administration can't figure out how to drop the price of fuel, I'm sure they know how, they just refuse to do it, because it would be so easy if you just took away some of the regulations, let people start pumping oil, you know, pumping crude and get it to the refineries. It would take like a couple weeks to drop the price of gas. But that's not going to happen, not with this administration. No, instead, now after I've already told you about the threats to the food supply, how much sense does this make? This is this administration's brilliant plan to lower gas prices somehow. And how? I'm not quite sure yet how this is going to lower gas prices and how much. But I can tell you this, it's going to raise the price of food again. Now, it's kind of hard for me to figure out, so which would be more important, food prices being lower or gas prices being lower? I know sometimes in the past people who were complaining about, you know, how much gas costs, because it's, what, $5 a gallon, but yet they'll pay $5 for a 20-ounce latte at the coffee shop. $5 for a 20-ounce latte at the coffee shop. Or $5 for a gallon of gas. Yeah, I get it. I mean, you have to have gas if you drive to work and back. I get that. I got to have another drink. But this is what this administration has decided to do. This administration says, well, what we need to do is have the farmers convert more of their corn into ethanol. So we can dilute the gas that you already put in your gas tank with ethanol, E15 they call it. Some people call it E85. I don't know if there's one or the other. You know, I don't know if one is absolutely correct. But yeah, so let's not only not produce or not put the corn into corn syrup, corn oil, you know, corn, well, I said corn syrup, that's sugar. No, let's convert it to ethanol and put it in our fuel tank. Now, this was the craziest thing, because I heard some debate on one of the mainstream media shows. And the idiot who was trying to, you know, talk about how bad this was, actually he was attacked by the person doing the interview, and he says, well, it's not really taking food off of the table. But yeah, it is. If you are fermenting corn to make ethanol, that corn can't go back into food. I mean, yeah, probably what's left of that corn they'll put in some kind of food for animals. But my point is, it's not going into the products that are on the store shelves. And whether you eat them or not, it's like 80-something percent of products in the store have some form of corn in them. So yeah, let's just take so much of the corn that actually does get produced this year, and instead of putting it on the table or in products that people can eat, let's dilute our gas with it and lower the cost of gas by, what, 10 cents a gallon? It's up like $2 from where it was a year ago, and some places $3 or more. That doesn't make sense to me. Of course, this whole ethanol thing has never made sense to me. Like, why you would, okay, just imagine how much effort has to go into creating ethanol from farm products. I mean, think of how much gas and diesel and time you and water you have to put into that corn, mostly it's corn, to produce ethanol. And then you turn around and put that crappy stuff in the pumps, so we all put it in our cars, and of course there's some argument that it's not good for your engine, it's not good for the machinery. You know, it's just, it's another one of those fake ideas that people think is great for the environment. It's really not. It's really not good for your engine. It's not good for, you know, a car. It's not good for gas. It's not good for people because we're taking food off the table. And that's something else that I've heard a lot this last week. People who are talking about, people who are talking about shortages of food are not now talking about famine. And I believe that that's, well, it's just a matter of time before the famine actually sets in. It may not be here. It may not be in the United States, North America. It may not be in the first world countries of the world. It's going to suck for a lot of us. First world countries, even. If you haven't already noticed some shortages at the markets, you're going to see them. You know, maybe you're lucky and you don't buy a lot of that stuff that is starting to show up short of, not having enough product on the shelves. But it's just a matter of time. But if you're in a third world country who depends on first world countries to provide you some flour or some rice or some beans, yeah, there's going to be some starving people this year. People are going to starve to death this year because we can't seem to pull our heads out of our butts enough to say we need fossil fuel to produce food. Wow, that's interesting. Can't get sausage in a favorite restaurant. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and my daughter goes to the store, and my wife who orders certain stuff from the supermarkets. I mean, we don't go in so much anymore. We found that that kind of remote shopping is pretty handy. So we just like place our order online. We show up, have them load it in the car, and off we go. But when we do go in the store looking for certain things, I mean, luckily the stuff we're looking for is probably not stuff that is going to be in short supply. But I'll tell you one thing that is sugar. We're going to start seeing the effects. We're going to start seeing a shortage of sugar too, because in some parts of the Northwest here, beet growers said that they have delayed their planting of sugar beets. I don't know if you're like me. I like cane sugar myself if I'm going to have sugar. But, yeah, no kidding. Everybody could use less sugar for sure. But it's kind of another one of those things that I was thinking. You know, when I talk about the Forrest Gump events in my life, this is one of them. Because, like, those bees just landed on my property, what, 2-3 weeks ago. And if there is a shortage of sugar, well, we use a lot of honey anyway. But, I mean, hey. We got, you know, we have honey producers right up the, you know, 200 yards away from the house. So another one of those kind of fortunate things that just kind of worked out for me at the right time. I'm looking forward to seeing what that tastes like too. That'll be awesome. But yeah, sugar beets. Well, I guess the growers said it's not disastrous yet that they don't have the beets planted. And the problem was there was snow on the ground and they're waiting for the snow to melt. Yeah, they are. They stink like crazy. Sugar beets are nasty when they process sugar beets. If you ever get a chance to watch that process or go take a tour, don't do it. It's horrible. They are very stinky, but they do get some sugar out of them. So kind of interesting process for sure. I do like cane sugar though. We try and stick with cane sugar. But you know what? Here's the deal. Like, that's how spoiled we are. It's like we could pick between no sugar, cane sugar, sugar beets, or some other alternatives like stevia or I don't know what all of them are, but there's a lot of alternatives out there. Isn't that crazy? Like, we're so lucky to be able to just to have that choice. But I think what people are going to see now is they're not going to have that choice. I mean, you're going to go to the store and they're going to say, hey, here's 5 pounds of sugar, take it or leave it, one per customer. And you're going to take whatever you need to make, you know, whatever it is you're making. Like, you know, you got to have sugar or honey and, you know, pancakes and baked goods and some recipes, you know, call for it. You're going to need something. You know, if you're used to using honey, that's pretty easy. But if not, you're going to wish you had some sugar. And it's going to be, you know, even, so just imagine if the sugar beet growers are having to wait to put their beets in the ground. Well, hopefully they already purchased their fuel for the year, but I doubt that they did. Although some of those big farms have giant fuel tanks on the land so that they get those filled up ahead of time. And, you know, maybe they won't incur so much of the fuel cost, but they will eventually, you know, be paying more for that fuel. And the later this crop gets in the ground, the later it gets harvested, the higher the prices are going to be unless, you know, this administration does something, and I just don't see that happening. Oh, let's see what else I got. What else do I have to say about that? I was saying, yeah. The only, I said, it amazes me how this administration can continue to do the stupidest thing. The only way I could even hope to understand it is if they actually are trying to kill a bunch of us people. The vax didn't kill enough of us. The virus didn't kill enough of us. The war isn't quite there yet to eliminate a bunch of us. There is definitely going to be a famine, though, and then I went on to talk about stuff I already did anyway. Yeah, the late snow and pollination, that has caused big issues. I mean, everywhere, like even just here on the property. You know, pollination, you got to have it to produce food, and, you know, it's not happening so much up here. You know, something else. So one more thing to add to the kettle, and I've talked about this before, but it actually came out this week. The Klamath Bay, you know, this is a crazy thing. And I didn't really look at this so close until, like, this year. I don't know why something finally started making sense to me about the Klamath River Basin and the snowpack and the rain amounts that we've had. Because this is, oh, that's cool. Lived in Klamath Falls for 2 years. That's awesome, man. Klamath Falls is kind of a nice place. I mean, it has, it's different for sure. God dang it. I got thrown off. Rob Works did it. Blame him. I was on a roll too. Yeah, I'll bet you did. Shoot. Lost my train of thought. Oh, no. Oh, no. That's what I was talking about. So the yeah, thanks, Robert. Another notch in the barrel there. Excuse me. Okay, so it's not only the amount of rain that falls or precipitation that falls at any time during the year that determines whether you're in a drought or not. And it's not, it's like not only the amount of snow pack in the mountains that matters or not. Actually, how fast that melts is very important to the supply of water going downstream to irrigate you know, crops and to feed the fish and to keep our environment alive and well. Well, so Oregon's had like a, or the Pacific Northwest, I'll say, has had a lot of rain this year, you know, a lot of great snowy days, you know, so there's, quite a bit of snow on the mountains. But like last year, we had quite a bit of snow, snowpack stored up. But what happened was we got hit with really hot temperatures early in the spring, and it melted it all so fast that it ran off, and, you know, the reservoirs could only hold so much. And so last year, you remember, Northern California didn't get a lot of water from the Klamath River Basin, which they depend on to irrigate, I don't know, 15% of their crops up there in Northern California. This year, they're already predicting it's going to be pretty much the same, which is kind of crazy because we've had a totally different year of rain and snow and snowpack, but still, we've been in, well, that part of the state is still in a pretty severe drought. That's Southern Oregon. So, you know, you can expect, again, down in Southern Oregon and Northern California, there are going to be crops that aren't going to get any water. They're just not going to get any water. There was a story of a farmer down there who raises alfalfa, and he grows the alfalfa for his cattle. And he said with the amount of water that he was allotted, he could raise about 15% of the alfalfa he normally does. And, you know, he had none to sell because his cows were eating it. And I mean, how many cows then can you produce, bring to market, if you don't have the alfalfa to feed them? And if you have to buy hay and alfalfa to feed your cows, you're buying that from somebody else, and probably the cost of it's pretty high because demand is high and supply is low. It's all connected. It is all connected for sure. Anyway, yeah, Klamath, Oregon watershed system is failing. The world is failing to provide water to the farmers, which, you know, if you think about it, maybe you shouldn't be trying to grow crops where there isn't water. That's one thing that we've done as settlers of this country, is trying to, you know, trying to force the land to give us, you know, resources that aren't there. Trying to maximize food production from resources that just aren't there. Like if you don't have water, you probably shouldn't be trying to grow food, you know, and you shouldn't be shipping water to areas that don't have it if you don't have enough to provide for your own population. It doesn't make sense to me. But yeah, as it said in the chat room here, the dominoes drop, and we're seeing it week by week. Every week, I'm not surprised that I have more stories of threats to our food supply. And they just keep coming. And here's, I guess, my final thought on that. The government isn't going to save you. They're not coming to your rescue. Especially this administration, but really every single administration. They have their own interests at heart. They're only interested in power and money for themselves. They don't care about you. They don't care if you have food or not. So hopefully do something to provide a little food security for yourself. I want to thank you guys for listening to the show. Thanks for joining me on Real Liberty Media. Those of you who get the podcast every week, I am so thankful. Please keep it up, and I will look forward to seeing you on Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Thanks again.